Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A colleague and comrade in arms in that war for many years has been Fred Flights. He is these days the Senior Vice President for Policy and Programs of our Center for Security Policy, but he brings to that job, and indeed to the commentaries that he's providing through various media platforms and so much else, is informed by his long experience as a career professional in the intelligence community, serving for some 20 years in the Central Intelligence Agency, also serving as the Chief of Staff to then Undersecretary of State John Bolton, and as a member of the Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence of the House of Representatives staff. He is a fabulous resource, and it's my great pleasure to say the author of a brand new book brought to you by the Center for Security Policy Press entitled The Coming North Korea Nuclear Nightmare: What Trump Must Do to Reverse Obama's Strategic Patience. I'm very pleased to have a chance to talk with Fred for a full hour, but in the course of all of that, we're going to wind up talking, I know, about some very important news that has broken as we're speaking with him, and that is that the president has decided to replace at last Rex Tillerson as the Secretary of State with Mike Pompeo, a man who has been serving with distinction for the past year or so as the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, Fred Flight's old store. We'll talk with him about that and much more in the course of this hour. Fred, first, a proper welcome. Thank you so much for joining us and for all you do now at the center and for what you have done in the past for our country and your various jobs. It's great to have you. Welcome back.
It's great to be here, Frank.
So I do want to talk in detail with you, Fred, about Tillerson and so much more. But I want to start with a topic that has been front and center for many of us since, well, particularly the charm offensive began by Kim Jong-un of North Korea a few weeks back in connection with the Olympics and what has flowed from that. But to do that properly, we have to understand what's been going on for years now. And you have made it really a focus of your work at the Central Intelligence Agency and elsewhere to track the North Korean threat. And I'd like to ask you to sort of start with a little bit of a 30,000-foot level assessment of how did we get here, where they're now facing us with very formidable and, it seems, highly dangerous weapons?
Well, Frank, that's actually the question that I pose at the beginning of my book, The Coming North Korea Nuclear Nightmare. How did we get here? Let me tell you how I got to this point. I had the privilege of working in national security jobs for state, CIA, and House Intelligence Committee. And for each of these jobs, I followed the Iranian and North Korean nuclear programs. I had access to very sensitive intelligence on both programs. And it's frustrating for me to see all the things that experts who have not been in government have been saying about these programs, have been downplaying their significance when I've seen really damning and troubling intelligence and how far both states were progressing towards making nuclear weapons. Now, I mentioned in the book, we know that North Korea has taken advantage of multiple U.S. presidents, really took advantage of the Clinton administration. The George W. Bush administration tried to strike a deal with North Korea in the second term, a terrible deal. And North Korea provided a fraudulent list of its nuclear program to Condoleezza Rice. And we knew it was fraudulent, and we rewarded North Korea anyway by taking off the state-sponsored terror list for that. But as bad as these administrations were, none of them compare to how bad Barack Obama's administration was with his policy of strategic patience, which basically was a policy to do nothing and to kick this nuclear and missile program down the road to the next president to deal with. And because of that policy, North Korea's nuclear missile programs really exploded during the Obama administration. Their nuclear technology resulted in what may have been a hydrogen bomb test last year, as well as bona fide ICBM tests last year. All these advances were made during the Obama years, and the Obama administration deliberately did nothing about it.
So let's tease that out. The Obama administration was, as you say, not alone in underestimating or otherwise sort of accommodating threats from North Korea that were all too apparent if you had the will and the wit to look at for them. But in this case, it was compounding the willingness to sort of accommodate the North Koreans by, in a sense, emboldening them. Was it not, Fred Flights, in the sense that we were really signaling an indifference to what they were doing, masked, of course, as you say, by this term strategic patience?
Well, I think that the Obama administration really wanted a nuclear deal with North Korea as badly as they wanted one with Iran. But Iran was the priority, and I believe Obama officials decided that pushing for a North Korea deal was simply too much to accomplish, given how hostile the North Koreans were and the difficulty of selling two controversial nuclear deals simultaneously. And I have a quote from someone who wrote a book about Hillary Clinton's foreign policy. She made the decision that they couldn't have too many complex international negotiations underway at once. But despite that, there were several attempts by the Obama administration to strike deals with North Korea. There was something called the Leap Day Agreement in 2012, in which we offered a huge amount of food aid in exchange for North Korea stopping its nuclear missile program. North Korea violated that agreement within 2 weeks. And in 2015, right after the nuclear deal with Iran was announced, President Obama indicated he wanted a similar deal with North Korea. Negotiations began in late 2015 to get such a deal. They continued until early 2016, but they were canceled when North Korea decided to scuttle the deal and test another nuclear device.
Yeah. So in other words, what was going on in the face of this so-called strategic patience, Fred Flights, was a sort of burgeoning program of threatening military capabilities. And it's one thing to say, well, we're, preoccupied with a country that, as you know better than just about anybody, was the strategic partner of North Korea in all of this, namely Iran. But it did, it seems to me, Fred Flights, signal to the North Koreans that they could do all of this with impunity. They may not have been rewarded with it, as they were by others in some cases, but they were being essentially told it doesn't matter what you do, no matter how material a threat it poses to the United States. And that's not the kind of signal you want to be sending, it seems to me, to a regime like the North Koreans, right?
No, that's exactly right. And I have other experts I cite in the book where the Obama administration made a conclusion that the North Korean nuclear missile programs were not that dangerous. Maybe if they ignored it, it would end. Maybe if they ignored North Korea, the regime would be overthrown. I mean, there's no credible experts I know who believe that. But these are among the things that were influencing their policy. You also might remember that the Obama administration was supposed to have a pivot to Asia. Well, that pivot never occurred. The Obama administration was AWOL in Asia while it was leading from behind in the Middle East. So this is part of an overall grossly incompetent approach to national security by the Obama administration.
Fred Flights, when we come back, I want to drill down on some of the things that you've written about that also characterized what the North Koreans were doing during this period that makes all the more outrageous the inaction of the Obama team. Specifically, the apparent development of electromagnetic pulse threats to this country and actual use of cyber warfare against our people and against our companies and perhaps against our government as well by the North Koreans. All of that and more with the author of the new book, The Coming North Korean Nuclear Nightmare, What Trump Must Do to Reverse Obama's Strategic Patience. Fred Flights, right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, joined by Fred Flights, our colleague at the Center for Security Policy, one of the country's preeminent experts on proliferation issues and much more. You will find him frequently on the pages of places like Newsmax and FoxNews.com, National Review. You can also see him frequently on all of the right television programs, and we're very pleased to feature him here at Secure Freedom Radio each week as well. Fred is the author of a brand new book. It's officially released tomorrow. We're getting a sneak preview of it with him. It's entitled The Coming North Korea Nuclear Nightmare, What Trump Must Do to Reverse Obama's Strategic Patience. And we've been talking a bit about what that strategic patience entailed on the part of the Obama administration and the real contribution, I think there's no question about it, it made to emboldening the North Koreans as they pursued increasing capabilities clearly designed to threaten this country. And Fred, in that regard, I wanted very quickly to ask you about two threats that were in the mix here, one having to do with nuclear capabilities, the other an adjunct to them. Let's start with electromagnetic pulse. Remind us what that is and what you think the North Koreans have in that domain that could be used to cause incredible damage to this country.
Well, electromagnetic pulse is a form of energy released by a nuclear explosion, and it's also released naturally by the sun. Nuclear devices release this energy. It doesn't harm human beings, but it destroys electronics, and it could destroy the entire U.S. electric grid if the nuclear device was detonated at the proper altitude above the United States. Now, many experts have been warning for years, and you're among them. Former CIA Director Jim Woolsey, Dr. Peter Pry, former CIA analyst, have been warning for years about the growing threat that North Korea is developing EMP weapons, which is really a logical step for the nuclear program because it's a way to leverage these weapons to do huge amounts of damage with a small nuclear arsenal. The evidence was very strong during the Obama years that the North Koreans were doing this, and the Obama administration did absolutely nothing about it. And then what happened? Last September, after North Korea tested its alleged H-bomb, Kim Jong-un issued a statement saying that this bomb could be used as a super EMP attack to use against the United States. People have been warning about this for years. Nothing was done about it during the Obama years.
Fred, so this EMP threat has metastasized, as has something else, cyber warfare. This is a nation, North Korea, that is often regarded as so backward, so poor, that it can't even feed its own people. It sounds incredible that it could threaten us in ways that it is doing now. But one area in which they have developed considerable capability, apparently, and my guess is with help from their Chinese sponsors, is the threat now posed by cyber attack. Talk a little bit about what we know in that regard.
Well, you know, most Americans find it surprising that North Korea would have a cyber warfare capability, but the North Korean military has invested a significant amount of money in placing North Korean hackers in foreign countries, in China and in Southeast Asian countries, to conduct cyber warfare on behalf of North Korea. And there were some major attacks during the Obama years. There were attacks against South Korean banks, there was the Sony picture attack in 2014, and there was actually theft of millions of dollars from foreign banks around the world during the Obama years. North Korean hackers stole military secrets from South Korean computers in 2015. And again, nothing was done. So, I mean, this is just another example where the Obama administration was just out to lunch concerning North Korea while it was in office.
Yeah. And again, putting American equities, if not actually lives, certainly equities, very much at risk. So, Fred, this is a moment when I think it's important to reflect on what the Obama administration was doing instead of trying to come to grips with the North Korean threats, namely, as you mentioned, giving priority to fashioning a deal with Iran. In addition to the observation we've already discussed that these two countries are joined at the hips, what was the effect, as you see it, of having a deal like the joint comprehensive plan of action, as it's called, the JCPOA, negotiated and agreed between the United States and other countries and Iran on that North Korean perception of what they could do and get away with?
I think the Iran deal conveyed to the world appeasement, American appeasement of Iran. And the North Koreans understood that. The North Koreans had worked very closely with Iran on its missile program, and I think almost certainly its nuclear program for many years. I suspect Iran was outsourcing nuclear research, and this increased after the nuclear deal was announced to North Korea. And I think this affected the way North Korea dealt with the United States. I suspect its belligerent behavior was to try to push the Obama administration to make some kind of a deal. You know, who knows what the North Koreans were thinking? You know, Obama would have met with Kim Jong-un in a minute, but Kim wouldn't meet with him. And I think he was intent on developing his nuclear missile weapons during a weak U.S. administration.
Yeah, well, he was calculating correctly that he would get away with it. Fred, there have been, of course, those who would say, well, this is unfair. President Obama did undertake to impose sanctions on the North Korean regime during his time in office. Tell us a little bit of what that actually involved and why it didn't seem to have much of an impact on the North.
There were plenty of UN sanctions and U.S. sanctions, but they just weren't enforced. It was what we saw during the Clinton administration. They liked to pass paper at the United Nations that was just meaningless. And this is sort of epitomized, and President Trump made a big deal out of this. The sanctions were so weak and so poorly enforced that North Korea's trade with China increased by 37% in the first quarter of 2017 because nothing was being done. After all these nuclear tests during the Obama years, the significant increase in its missile program, we weren't pressing China. We weren't pressing other states to enforce these sanctions, and basically China and North Korea ignored them.
Yeah. Now, of course, the first quarter of 2017 would have been into the Trump administration in part. But what we're going to talk about, Fred Flights, in our next block with you is both the very significant differences in the Trump administration's approach to North Korea, notably with respect to sanctions, but not exclusively, this so-called maximum pressure campaign that the president has been implementing. And we're also going to talk about what has now emerged in the past few weeks in terms of new challenges from the North Koreans, new ways in which they are, it appears, trying to buy time to presumably continue building this threat, and what that will entail for diplomacy, for the Trump administration's policies of the sanctions regime, as well as, of course, this buildup of military capabilities, if they are regrettably going to be needed to dismantle the threats that we're now confronting, chartered and described so well in your new book, The Coming North Korea nuclear nightmare, what Trump must do to reverse Obama's strategic patience. You can download this important new book for free at securefreedom.org or get it as an Amazon or Kindle book. I encourage you to do so. Fred Flights will be back with more in our continuing conversation with its author right after this.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We are visiting with Fred Flights, our colleague at the Center for Security Policy, a career and very distinguished professional in the intelligence business, the author of a very important book entitled Obama Bomb, The Great and Growing National Security Fraud. He has been devoting time of late to putting a similar treatment together concerning Iran's nuclear partner, North Korea. It is now out. I'm very pleased to say it is entitled The Coming North Korea Nuclear Nightmare. And Fred, what you talk about in this book, in addition to a I think, very carefully done and quite appropriate critique of the Obama practice of so-called strategic patience, is what President Trump has been doing since he came to office, both in the way of a different approach and hopefully one that will be far more effective. Talk a little bit about that, please.
Well, I describe how President Trump really has taken an unorthodox approach to North Korea, and I include criticism of it. And I note that it appears to be very successful. He has basically said to the North Koreans that he's not going to stand for its violations of sanctions, for its continual threats to the United States and its allies, its threats to attack with nuclear weapons, its missile tests. And I think the real difference here is that with the president's rhetoric and with an across-the-board campaign to press international officials at almost every meeting to stop their connections with North Korea. In some instances, our diplomats have brought up connections that foreign officials didn't know about that they had with North Korea. It's made a difference. The president has succeeded in passing much tougher UN sanctions with significantly improved enforcement. There have been some loopholes, there's been some cheating, but I believe North Korea is feeling real pain. But most important, the North Korean leadership sees Mr. Trump as a credible president who could use military force against it. And that's something that North Korea has not seen in a long time, and I think it has caused the North Korean leadership to at least change its tactics. I think the jury is still out on whether it is actually sincere in denuclearizing.
Yeah. This is, of course, going to be very much at the forefront of the conversations that we will be watching carefully coming up, and I want to talk to those about those with you, Fred Flights, in a moment. But just staying with the president's new approach, in part, clearly, the kind of campaign of maximum pressure, as it's called, that you just described, Fred, is a function of the still greater capabilities that were clearly in the works in North Korea prior to this presidency, but that have become manifest now, notably advanced ballistic missiles and of sufficient range unquestionably to cover the United States, the advent of a thermonuclear weapon, it appears, as well, and presumably, you know, follow-on capabilities with respect to achieving perhaps this super electromagnetic pulse capability as well. So the president has ample reason to be trying to focus seriously on this and correct what's being done. To what extent is that, in fact, the reason that we're seeing a greater degree of cooperation on the part of other nations, is that they now get it. This is no kidding, down to the possibility of really of a conflict being the only way to prevent perhaps Armageddon.
I think other nations were waiting for credible U.S. leadership. I also believe that North Korea's missile test, and especially the possible H-bomb test, was a bridge too far for many of our leaders. You know, I argue with my conservative friends about China. I think China is an adversary, and it wants to use North Korea as a proxy against the United States. But there is credible information that the Chinese are very displeased with North Korea's possible H-bomb test. They're worried about radiation leaking into China. And also, they don't like being criticized publicly by the president of the United States for violating sanctions and lying to him. And I think all these factors have increased Chinese compliance with sanctions. I think that that compliance is imperfect. Maybe maybe there's significant cheating, but that has played a role in putting more pressure on North Korea than it has ever felt, and to at least change tactics. And as I said, we still don't know whether they're sincere in wanting to denuclearize.
Yeah. Well, let's turn to that, Fred Flights, because this is really the multi-billion dollar question right now. First of all, I'm uncertain whether we actually have ground truth on what the North Koreans have on the table at the moment. To the best of my knowledge, they have not yet officially acknowledged in their media that they're even having this meeting with President Trump, let alone that they've undertaken to denuclearize in the course of it. In fact, I've talked about some reporting by Lawrence Peck, a North Korea expert, indicating that the North Korean media, the propaganda arm of the state, run by his sister, by the way, Kim Jong-un's, who is much feted in the Olympics in South Korea recently, it indicates that there's a continuing attachment to their nuclear capabilities, which they describe as a deterrent force. Walk us through that, Fred. Do we know that there is indeed a willingness on the part of the North Koreans to denuclearize? And if not, what is the purpose of this conversation, do you think?
I've been thinking this through, and I've been discussing it with the discussion on Fox, for example. I suspect that even the North Koreans were surprised that the president so quickly accepted their invitation. It may not have been a serious invitation. Now they're trying to decide how to respond. We have to assume that this is just a ploy to buy time, to divide the U.S. from other countries, to extract concessions, and to weaken sanctions. That's what the North Koreans do in negotiations. That's their track record. They have a long way to go to prove to us that they are sincere. This is how they can prove it. They have to first stop nuclear and missile tests. They've done that temporarily. There have to be intrusive inspections of every nuclear and missile site. They can't declare sites off limits like they did in the past. Nuclear missile sites and nuclear weapons have to be disassembled. Nuclear fuel has to leave the country. And there has to be a complete and accurate accounting of North Korea's nuclear and missile programs. And as I said, North Korea offered accountings in the past. They cheated on it and were rewarded anyway. That can't happen again.
Do you see any evidence, Fred Flights, that the North Koreans are in fact prepared to do those things? You mentioned that they've stopped nuclear testing, they've stopped ballistic missile testing. I'm told that there is satellite imagery of the facility at Yongbyon where they have been manufacturing plutonium for their nuclear weapons program, that it's still at work. And how much, you know, you're an intelligence professional, so you know this far better than I, but you have been noting, I think, that we have been repeatedly surprised by some of these tests, especially on the missile side. Could preparations for those be continuing apace and we're just not able to discern it?
The North Koreans are experts at defeating our spy satellites because so much has been leaked on our intelligence capabilities. I laugh every time I see an expert say a North Korean nuclear test is coming based on satellite imagery, because it's almost always wrong. The North Koreans test, no one ever knows the tests are coming. I haven't seen any evidence. We just know secondhand that the North Koreans want to denuclearize. No North Korean official, as far as I know, has said that to U.S. official. We need a lot of confirmation before we can treat this as true.
Right. And this really brings me to my last point on that, Fred, and that is, could the South Koreans who met with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un and others have either misunderstood or simply misrepresented what was being said in the hopes that they would be able to move things along as President Moon over there is anxious to do. Fred, we have to pause for one more break. When we come back, I do want to get back to this other very dramatic development in terms of American diplomacy, the replacement of Secretary of State Rex Tillerson with Mike Pompeo, the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, and then I think we both know and admire greatly. We'll be right back to talk about the new lineup at the State Department right after this.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back for our final installment of a very special conversation with Fred Flights, one of the men I admire most for his grasp of the most challenging national security issues of our day. He is, we've been talking, drawn upon his expertise derived of 20 years of following closely, among other things, nonproliferation issues in the Central Intelligence Agency, his work with John Bolton in the Department of State, and at the as a professional staff member at the House Intelligence Committee. Fred, we could talk with you all day easily, and not least about the latest developments on the House Intelligence Committee Republicans deciding that there is, after all this time, no evidence of collusion between the president and Russia. But that's for another day. I do want to hit a couple of other things. We mentioned at the top of the show that Rex Tillerson is out. Mike Pompeo has been tapped to be the next Secretary of State, currently the Director of the Central Intelligence Agency. Tell us a little bit about the importance of this change. It's interesting. I was listening to the British Broadcasting Corporation, BBC, earlier today, and they were talking about how Rex Tillerson was discussing on his way back from Africa the role he intended to play in these conversations with the North Koreans. That isn't going to happen. What kind of difference might it make that it's Mike Pompeo at State, not Rex Tillerson?
Well, you know, I know a number of people who really admire Rex Tillerson, but he was a bad fit for the State Department. He really was at sea and tried to manage that bureaucracy. He had this huge reorganization plan that wasn't going well. And if it was ever implemented, the next secretary was going to reverse it. And there's all these empty positions, all these vacancies. I'm afraid we lost a year, Frank, at the State Department. And I have great admiration for Mike Pompeo. He has the president's confidence, which is crucial. Pompeo has been right on the nuclear deal with Iran, so I have very high expectations for Pompeo, Secretary of State.
He has his critics, needless to say, in the United States Senate. They will doubtless be taking him to task, presumably, among other things, for his conservative credentials, which you and I admire greatly, as well as perhaps some of his judgments about these issues, notably the Iran deal. And yet I feel confident that he will be confirmed. The larger question, though, is will he be able to make a difference at the State Department? You've worked in that building. You know the bureaucracy very well. You understand the limitations on any leader of the organization to effect change, given the nature of the Foreign Service and civil service personnel there, Fred Flights. What do you think the chances are that the fit might be better with the president, but the job may still be extraordinarily difficult in getting the department to serve the administration as it's supposed to?
Well, the key is staffing the department with people who support the president's policies, filling the political appointed positions to do this. Now, we know a lot of them are being blocked by Democrats in the Senate. Well, maybe we're going to need some recess appointments. But that really is, I think, his most important task, getting the State Department to support the president's policies and filling vacant positions. Not all of them are confirmable. Some are political appointees, and they're still vacant that don't need confirmation. And the president can't implement some of these groundbreaking policies he's pursuing, such as with North Korea, if he doesn't have the staff at the lower levels to help him implement them? And those people just aren't there right now.
This is so crucial, and it's an unenviable task. You talk about the swamp. This is one of the places in which it is particularly evident. Fred, let me ask you about one other story that's in the news at the moment. Again, you have followed weapons of mass destruction for a long time. I'm sure you know a lot about a nerve agent developed by the Soviet Union called Novichok, or Newcomer in English. It appears, according to the British government, that this agent was used to try to kill a former Russian spy who had become an agent for the British government, a double agent, I guess you'd call him, in the business, and his daughter. What's up with that? And how do you think the British government, and for that matter, the rest of us, should respond if it's confirmed?
This is confirmed. There have to be severe repercussions for Russia. This isn't the first time Russia has done this. A Russian dissident was killed with polonium-210 in London a few years ago. I think, you know, the Brits are going to have to think about, are they going to break relations, or what type of retaliation will there be against Russia? And I mean, this just reflects a nation who is run, that's run by a president who's frankly a thug, a former KGB thug. That's Vladimir Putin. And I think it's par for the course for Putin.
Yeah, it comes on the heels of something else that was pretty bracing, I think, for most of us who follow these things, Fred Pleitz. And that was the speech that he made to his parliament, as I recall, in which he was ostensibly describing the state of Russia. But what he wound up diverting onto at some length, including with visual aids, were descriptions of some extraordinarily alarming new nuclear weapons capabilities that he has apparently either brought into his arsenal or is in the process of doing so. What do you make of these threats? For example, a long-range drone submersible that is capable, apparently, of delivering a 100 megaton nuclear weapon to a coastal area of the United States with incalculably devastating effects.
Well, you know, Putin bragged in that speech that he had a missile that the U.S. couldn't shoot down. You know, I didn't find that the most alarming part of the speech, because Russia already has so many nuclear warheads. This additional missile doesn't increase the nuclear threat to our country. What's dangerous is that the Russians are continuing to develop more and more advanced nuclear weapons, and the U.S. is not. Our nuclear arsenal is deteriorating. Russia's arsenal is improving and getting better and getting stealthier. So in the short term, and you and I know Russia already has a huge advantage in nuclear warheads. In the short term, it doesn't change the balance of power, but it's a very disturbing development, because we know Russia's continuing to develop these weapons, and China is too.
Fred, lastly, very quickly, you've written a scathing critique of a new outfit called the National Security Action. Tell us who they are and why they deserve such a criticism.
Well, a group of about 50 former Obama officials, including Susan Rice, Ben Rhodes, and Samantha Power, have formed an anti-Trump think tank called National Security Action, and they're going to pursue global warming and generally attacking Trump. But what's amusing about this, Frank, is that their initials are NSA, and these officials were involved in abusing the real NSA to unmask the names of Trump campaign staff and use intelligence to harm the president's ability to win the last election. So I just wonder if this is a Freudian slip, but it certainly looks rather ridiculous.
Fred, you are a source of great information always, and it's always a pleasure to have you with us on this program. I look forward to doing so with you again next week. In the meantime, congratulations on your new book. We look forward to doing a live stream with you tomorrow at 2:30 on Facebook Live to discuss the book in more detail and to share with our listeners some of your insights into what President Trump must do now to deal with this North Korean nuclear nightmare. Fred Flights, again, thanks so much for joining us. Come back to us again soon. We'll talk with the rest of you, I hope, tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.